When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Think you know the Brooks Ghost? Think again. Introducing the all-new, better-than-ever Ghost 16. Now with nitrogen-infused cushioning for lightweight, supreme softness that feels good every step, every street, every single day. So go ahead, take your daily joyride in the all-new nitrogen-infused Ghost 16. It'll turn your everyday miles into everyday endorphins. Let's run there. Head to brooksrunning.com to learn more.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Cricket Unfiltered podcast. I am Menas, and this is the season finale of the show. After this episode, we'll be taking a little break to refresh. I'm an all-format podcaster, so every now and then I need to take a break. I play all the Shield, I play all the domestic stuff. I never take a break, but a break is due. And joining me for the season finale is Gav Joshi. Gav, how are you?
I'm good, Menas. I'm good. Yeah, it's just there is no off season in cricket anymore, is there? You just sit there and there's some sorts of cricket, whether that's women's cricket, whether that's T20 cricket, something's always going on.
That's right. So I'm going to take a little break, relax. I'm going to obviously be watching the IPL. I never stop watching cricket, but there'll be no podcasts for the next month. And Gav, I was going back through my workload over the last sort of year or so. Since the 1st of January 2023, there has been 182 episodes of Cricket Unfiltered, including this one. That's in about 463 days, which means there's been a new episode just under every 3 days. So
that is fantastic.
Yeah, well, there's been a lot of great cricket in the last year and a half. There's been the Indian Test Tour. There's been the World Test Championship Final. There's been the Ashes. There's been the World Cup. And then we had the recent Aussie summer. So it's been a bit of a cricket lover's dream.
It has. I mean, it's probably the most, in terms of sort of, you know, given the context of all the series as well, you know, the Ashes, T20 World Cup, you know, probably, to be honest, like 3 months ago or 4 months ago when we started the first podcast for the summer, we were probably like, well, it's going to be probably one of the most dull summer. But, hey, Pakistan pushed Australia, certainly in that second test match, maybe even in the third test match, should have even won the same. And, of course, West Indies. World Cup, we started off, you giving a roasting to every single Australian player, coach, administrator, selector, but it ended with, you know, just you screaming and yelling, and you might be, you know, a little bit further away from me, but, you know, I think everyone in Australia sort of heard you cheering at Australia won their sixth World Cup. So, and back of that, you know, like a terrific test series, especially the second test in New Zealand. So it has been, the cricket in games that Australia has featured in has been riveting. It's been great to watch, not just five-day cricket, but, you know, definitely the one-day cricket. And to be honest, it's been refreshing, Menas, because we haven't really talked much about T20 cricket, and maybe that's why it's been an exciting summer for, you know, old schoolers like us. Well, certainly me.
That's true. I mean, we finished with the fantastic test series in New Zealand, brief but very exciting. The T20 T20 cricket, though, will be featuring prominently now that we're in a T20 World Cup year. And I'm actually getting really excited about the T20 World Cup being played in the USA. I think that's going to be so fascinating to see how much it gains traction on the ground in the USA for the World Cup. So, you know, big year ahead, big summer gone, but don't rest assured, listeners, there actually I'll be putting out some classic interviews while we're taking the month off, because the podcast has been going for almost 11 years. You know, I've been fortunate enough to have on 15 Australian captains, numerous commentators and players. So I'm actually going to be going through the archives and pulling out some interviews from the history of the show and releasing them over the next month. So if you're a newer listener or an older listener looking to revisit some of the interviews, there'll be some great stuff there.
What about Mad Menas?
Mad Menas. Well, Mad Menas versus England has been taken off the internet. But yes, I will not be re-releasing Mad Menas. I'll be releasing like Mad Chappelli. I remember being very nervous before interviewing Ian Chappell, so I'll re-release that one. I've got a whole list somewhere. I'm going to release one with young Pat Cummins. So some good stuff to listen for over the next month. All right, before we get into the cricket headlines, this season finale is brought to you by NordVPN. And if you head to nordvpn.com/cricketunfiltered, listeners get a special offer. There's a 30-day money-back guarantee, and there's 4 months for free if you sign up for 2 years. So head to the link in the show notes to get that special offer. And there's never been a more important time than right now. With the rise of cybercrime, you can protect all your private browsing data by using a VPN, and you can give yourself peace of mind that that data is secured by using a virtual private network. Also, there's other great benefits with rising costs. You can save a bit of money by using a VPN to change your virtual private location and watch movies, TV shows, or even cricket that might be geo-blocked where you're located. So it's also a great way of saving a bit of money. So head to nordvpn.com/cricketunfiltered. If you're a supporter of the show, please click on the link, check it out. You won't be disappointed. I use the service myself and I'm very, very satisfied. Now let's get to the cricket headlines. And although the off season is underway, still a lot of cricket news, Gav. So with the schedule for next summer has been announced, and I'll go through the women's schedule first because that starts first. So Australia plays New Zealand in 3 T20 internationals. Then they actually head over to Bangladesh, I think it is, for a T20 World Cup. Then they come back for an ODI series versus India. But then the highlight for the women's schedule is the Women's Ashes series. There's 3 T20s, 3 ODIs, and then they play a day-night test match at the MCG, and it's a 4-day pink ball test. What do you think, Gav?
That's going to be interesting to see what the crowd is like, isn't it? Let's hope it's in Melbourne. So we sit here and recording this and it's pouring down in Sydney, so I don't want to get stuck into the Melbourneians, but it's fantastic because I think one of the best test matches we've had, there's one against South Africa, but the one in which was in Gold Coast against India, I think, where the ball really hooped around, quality opposition. So that's one of the memorable day and night test matches. So let's hope this one at the MCG, we'll get a big crowd, it will be in summer. Look forward to that because, you know, women's cricket is really sort of on the rise, and especially given the Ashes. Let's hope it's going to be a huge summer of cricket. Like, I think India is also coming here as well. For three match series. Disappointed. I don't think they're in Sydney at all.
No, they're in Brisbane for 2 games and then at the Wacker.
I thought, you know, given the crowds, I thought they might have a bit of a little tour all around Australia. Because I think if Australia-India, that game was at North Sydney Oval or even at the SCG, I think it'll be packed to the rafters, the women's. So a little bit disappointed it's not in Sydney, but such is the scheduling. But yeah, like that MCG pink ball test, I think is definitely the pinnacle of that schedule for next summer for women's cricket.
Yeah, definitely. And a couple of issues with that four-day pink ball test match. I guess the first one is that it's 4 days. I think in the right conditions, you can play four-day women's test cricket. I think with a pink ball under lights, it probably does make sense because most pink ball test matches, even for men, tend to finish within 4 days. So I do think that's sensible. I think, though, if you get onto wickets where it's a bit more traditional cricket with a red ball, you need the fifth day in women's cricket to allow for a result. But I actually think this is quite pragmatic. It's 4 days. It's a pink ball test. It's under lights at the MCG. I think it'll work. I think more than likely we'll get a result unless weather intervenes. So I don't have a problem with it. But do you agree with me, Gav, that I am cautious that if you're playing more traditional test cricket, you do need the fifth day?
Yeah, I agree. I'm still in for 5 day test cricket. There's no doubt about it. We don't want to get to a scenario, and I think we learned a big lesson. I think it was when Elise Kaperi got that double 100 at North Sydney Oval when it was just so hard to get a result. I think it was about 4 or 5 years ago now, pre-COVID. I think the pink ball, it hoops around. I think genuinely, I think someone like Megan Shute or even Elise Perry, the amount of swing they get on the ball, I think they'll be tested as well. And I think, to be honest, over the summer, one test match I don't think we speak highly about was that one against India and Australia in Mumbai. I think that was one of the best test matches I've seen for a long time. Mm. Yes, Australia ended up on the losing side, but, you know, the way McGrath batted, it was just like, you know, I think some of the Australian cricketers who failed in the subcontinent should be made to watch that knock as well, Menas. So I agree with you. I think 5 day cricket, yes, you need it, but I think there will be result orientated pitches to ensure that, you know, 4 days should be enough to get a result. And I think we'll see, you know, likes of, and even in that test match, we saw likes of how, you know, Healy would bat. And I think given that she's taken over the skipper, I don't think Australia is going to be playing sort of dull cricket. I think we're also going to see, just in general, I think women's cricket will start getting terms with, playing more expansive cricket and forcing a result rather than playing for a draw.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it's the right move, and I can't wait for it. I'd love to be there for it. So that's the 30th of January to the 2nd of February. Elise Perry spoke to the media when this was announced and did say there is some nerves about getting a crowd in there because, you know, the MCG, if you only get 20,000 people in there, it can feel pretty sparse. But I hope the Melbourneians rock up for a Women's Ashes Test match because we love beating the Poms, so you got to turn up for that one. Now, turning our attention to the men's schedule for next summer. So Pakistan will be visiting our shores again, this time for white ball cricket. So they'll play 3 one-day internationals against Australia at the MCG, the Adelaide Oval, and at Perth Stadium. That's in the first week of November. And then they play 3 T20s against Australia at the Gabba, the SCG, and at Hobart. So Pakistan here again. And that is the entree before the Border Gavaskar Trophy. The first time it'll be 5 test matches in Australia versus India since the early 90s, 92, 93. That's a very famous series. Tendulkar made a couple of hundreds. Warne made his test debut. And that was a magic summer all the way back in 92, 93. But they're returning again for 5 test matches. I guess first thing, Gav, was, I don't know if you heard, but, you know, Australia was trying to get India to agree to a tri-series against Pakistan because there was going to be a bit of a crossover, but India didn't go for it.
No,
that would have been something.
Never going to happen because those three matches, or might have been 3 one-dayers or whatever tri-series, if they would have generated, as we know, like the T20 World Cup is in about in sort of, you know what, 2 months' time. The amount of broadcasting revenue is probably based, you know, 40% of that is based on an Australia-Pakistan match. That's what everyone glues to. That's where, you know, sponsors want to put their ads on TV. So imagine Australia getting that money away from the BCCI or the Star Sports. Mm. That was never going to happen. I think it was a positive thinking, but given the broadcast deals are huge, I think that it was a nice process, not a nice way to lure sort of India and Pakistan at the same time. But look, at the end of the day, like, you know, it's going to be Cricket Australia that's probably going to be making money, and that was never going to be on the cards. In terms of BCCI, they said, well, we're earning about $800 million or billion dollars, whatever it is, and we're not going to give away a single cent to Cricket Australia.
Absolutely. Now to the test series, the schedule for the test series versus India. And I think this is a very good schedule for Australia. I think it does give us a good chance of winning a test series versus India for the first time since 2014-15. Can you believe that? It's been 10 years since we won a test series versus India. Of course, they have famously won their last two series here. The first time when Warner and Smith were rubbed out of the game for the Sandpapergate scandal, and the second, that famous victory led by Rishabh Pant at the Gabba. But yeah, the schedule I think works out for Australia. The first test is at Perth Stadium on the 22nd of November. Then it goes to the Adelaide Oval for a day-night test. And Gav, I was surprised the BCCI agreed to a day-night test. I don't think they played one last time they were here. Were you at all surprised?
Oh, last time was a little bit different given COVID. They did actually play, and given that they were rolled for 36, but that happened during bright daylight hours. I think India.
So that was a pink ball test match. So they did play one.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, 36 all out. The first test match.
It was so quick, I forgot about it. It was the fact that it was over on I think it was over on the third morning before lunch.
Yeah, before tea. I remember scooting into Victoria because that night. The Victorians were closing the border for South Australians. So as I always tell people, I was me and our co-friend Barrett and the rest, and we're the only two sort of people who were writing for Indian outlets and over here. We're grateful that we got to see a series, and that 36 all out was important because it allowed us to watch the MCG match and then also the SCG match. Otherwise, we might have been stuck in Adelaide, like I think Ian Chappell, Brett Lee, and a few of the other people were. So. So I'm not surprised by that. I think out of five, they're happy to play one.
I'm not either now that I've remembered they played one last time. I think that's good for Australia. Start at Perth, good boundary conditions, get India under lights. Hopefully that's an advantage. Then we go to the Gabba for the third test. Again, good conditions, extra bounce, can test the young Indian batters that they'll be sending here, and then they finish at the MCG and the SCG. So I think it's a good schedule of cricket. I think it favours Australia, and no reason we can't win convincingly.
No, and Australia's got, like you mentioned, Australia hasn't lost a day-night test match. It's a phenomenal record in Adelaide. They start in Perth.
I think they have lost a day-night test because wasn't the test against India a day-night, West Indies a day-night test? Against?
Oh, yes. Never? Of course.
That was the first one they lost.
Yes, and none in Adelaide, I think.
That was at the Gabba,
none in Adelaide. Yep, you're right. And, the first test match in Perth. So that's going to be interesting. I mean, I agree with that. I think India wouldn't mind that, to be honest. Like, I think it actually helps. Then I texted a couple of Indian players. They were actually didn't mind because they were like, it helps them get over jet lag. As long as they have, from my understanding, they might have a couple of games there that India might arrive good sort of 7 or 8 days before. Because they find it hard when, you know, you travel sort of 5.5 hours forward. And then you got to sort of acclimatize it. That can take 3 or 4 days. So coming a week ahead on the eastern seaboard is different to coming to the western seaboard because the time difference between India and Perth is only 2.5 hours. So, that's a little bit different.
I guess as well, India have some pretty handy quicks themselves. They can think, well, you know, we'll get an aging Australian batting lineup on some quick decks.
Yeah, exactly. And absolutely. I think that's changed. I mean, you said the record. India's won two test series here in the last two occasions. So I don't think that bounce and pace, I don't think it worries them. I mean, the record shows that in the last two series, they've managed to beat Australia. So I don't think they'll really worry about that. And I think from, like I mentioned, a couple of the Indian players are actually quite happy that it's actually in Perth because they found even I think it was one of the tri series it happened about a few years ago, and they said it was easy to acclimatize because we're just 2.5 hours, you know, they'll get a direct flight usually, from somewhere, you know, and they'll fly across, and it makes it a lot easier. They find like the weather in Perth is good as well. I don't think India will mind that. I don't think Australia mind that. And prime time sort of hours for in terms of broadcasters for the first. I think this will be, in terms of broadcasting sort of viewership. I think this next year or this summer coming up will break all records for a test series in Australia, given that it's a closed test series.
Wow, big call. Yeah, I would think. Will it overshadow the Ashes though? Normally, the
I think so. I think so. I definitely think so. I mean, given the Indian population in Australia right now, I think, and it, you know, last time India came was 3 years ago. We've still got 8 months to go before the Test series. 4 years on, you know, you probably think the other day I was doing a bit of research, and you know, including there's 1 million. The population of sort of the Indian background people in Australia now has reached 1 million. So that's 1 in 25. That's enormous. You know what I mean? So I think that's going to be huge. So I think it'll break all broadcasting records.
I like it. All right, continuing with the schedule, a couple of other things. One thing of note for us, Gav, for our Sheffield Shield commentary, George Bailey did say that October – would be relatively free for Australian players. So we might see a few playing in the Sheffield Shield in preparation for the Border Gavaskar Trophy. I have a feeling, you know, a lot of these Australian players, this will be their last roll of the dice playing India, and that they'd want to finish with a win. So we might actually see a few playing Shield cricket in preparation for that series. And
No, I was going to say, did George Bailey also say there's going to be an Australia A against India A series sometime?
That's true. Yeah.
And they haven't confirmed the timing, but that could run in parallel with the Test series, I believe.
That's correct.
From my understanding. So that will be interesting to see as well. So India could potentially bring, you know, last time, bring a squad of around 30, or last time they had a touring party of 65, which was, you know, the Australian government had to give them the tick to fly into the country. So this time no tick is required. So we might get 70 or 80.
And also with the schedule, so the Test match at the SCG is the last international game of the home summer. So that could open up the possibility of a lot of the major Australian Test players heading back into the Big Bash for the last couple of weeks of that competition. We've seen in the last 2 years what a huge boost it is having the Australian stars. The only complication with that is Australia is due in Sri Lanka late January, early February for a two Test match series. So the availability of the Australian players in the Big Bash will just depend on when they jet off for that Test series. As always, a massive squeeze on the schedule. But, you know, if you can get the Australian players in there for the last 2 weeks of the Big Bash, I think that adds to the competition.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we've known that. We wanted that. So it's going to be, you know, look, I like the Big Bash. I think last year was an enormous success just with the fact that it was truncated. I think we got the timing relatively correct. And I think especially this time with the Test series ending, you know, I think 7th of Jan, I think it's going to open up that little bit of window, at least for sort of even if, you know, a Warner, or not Warner anymore, but that slips out quite easy now, but someone like a Smith or, you know, a Stark or somebody like that, even if they're playing sort of two or three games for their respective franchise, I think that's huge in terms of BBL eyeballs.
Yeah, definitely. All right, we're going to take our first break of this season finale of the Cricket Unfiltered podcast. Then we'll be back to go through the recently announced Australian male player contract list.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
You're listening to the Cricket Unfiltered podcast. It's our season finale. I'm Menas. I'm with Gav Joshi. And recently, Cricket Australia announced their contract list for male Australian players for the next year. And just to clarify something, this upcoming T20 World Cup actually sits within the current contract period. So this is actually a contract list for after that T20 World Cup. So I'm going to go through the players not retained first. You've got Ashton Agar and Marcus Stoinis. So there are two players who you might see feature in the T20 World Cup, but have not been retained past that. And Gav, that would indicate that they're starting to look to the future of the white ball sides.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you look at the pinnacle sort of tournaments that will come afterwards. So I look, full credit, I know you roasted George Bailey, like I said, 6 months ago, but I think one of the reasons why Australia's been very successful over the last 6 months is the relationship between Pat Cummins, Andrew McDonald, and also George Bailey. I think that, yeah, the communication into sort of the glimpse into the future, I think, you just look at someone like Steve Smith opening the batting, from that to, getting someone like Aaron Hardy into the team. I think that communication needs to be really credited. And I think there has been that. I mean, given Marcus Stoinis has lost his contract, you could probably say Michael Nice a little bit different, but
So positive about the communication. They're such a happy family.
They are at the moment.
Well, then the other players that weren't retained, so Matt Renshaw not retained. George Bailey said that, and actually this is interesting, he said that Renshaw just made it on the plane trip to New Zealand, basically, and that really that when this current crop of test batters retire, it is wide open who could replace them, because Renshaw wasn't given a contract, Marcus Harris wasn't given a contract. And, I think the door was left open by Bailey that, the batters really have an opportunity in domestic cricket to grab a test spot with the weight of runs, like a Cameron Green did a few years ago with, big century after big century. And, I think of players like Ollie Davies or Nathan McSweeney, younger players coming through. Maybe Renshaw's a bit younger, but say Harris might actually miss the boat now.
Yep, absolutely. And it's going to be, and you never know. I mean, what guarantees are they of Steve Smith? If he has a couple of failures at the start of the Indian summer and Australia go on to lose a couple of test matches, then where does Steve Smith fit into all this?
Anywhere. He's averaging almost 60 in test cricket. You put him back in the middle order if you have to. And then
Exactly. Especially if Australia lose the first test match. So I think it's going to be huge.
A Renshaw or a Harris couldn't way into the side, but what Bailey said was, look, everyone's got an opportunity now. No one's really bashed the door down.
Yeah, and I think when I was saying the communication's been positive, it's keeping everyone on their toes, everyone needs to be able to score runs, and if they do, and let's not forget, just because even if you're not a contracted player, and if you can still play for Australia, it's not like you can't play for Australia, so let's remember that.
The other players not retained, of course, David Warner because he's retired, but also Michael Nisa. And Bailey said that actually Nisa's place on the pecking order hasn't changed too much, but the way the contract list worked out, which we'll go through in a minute, meant, he just kind of missed out, which is, it's not going to do Nisa any good hearing that. But it does indicate that in the contract list, they're looking at some younger fast bowlers. But, if you did have a series of injuries where, your experienced heads like Hazelwood and Cummins and even Stark went down, Bailey did indicate that doesn't mean Nice is out of the picture just because he wasn't given a contract.
Yeah, I agree, and yeah, you know, you got to look at the next crop, and you know, I think you look at someone like Xavier Bartlett coming through. I mean, he's 25. We were talking about this, I think, even on commentary. Is you look at when Pat Cummins, Mitch Starc, Josh Hazlewood. When did Nathan Lyon, when did they, and these guys have been part of the system, but when did they make their debuts? They were all around sort of 22, 23. I think Josh Hazlewood might have been, you know, I think he played his second test match when he was 24, but, you know, they started. And now if you look at
who's Cummins was 18.
Well, Cummins was 18. So who's that next crop that's coming along? You don't want them to be, you know, a Michael Nisa, 31, 32, or even a Scott Boland who's more 34, 35. Where are those guys who are around at 24, 25, like the Xavier Bartlett's, that if he does prove himself, then, you know, he's got a long time. You know, they can give him those 7 or 8 test matches. While someone like, you know, if you go to someone like Michael Nisa, he's only going to be around for a short sort of couple of years. It's not even going to be longer than that.
No, you're right. And if you – so let's go through the actual contract list now. So that was all played, not retained. So – you mentioned fast bowling. So I think there is a real indication here that they're looking at a succession plan for this fast bowling trio of Hazlewood, Starc and Cummins. So you've got Bartlett offered a contract for the first time. You've got Ellis offered a contract. And I think they really see him as a white ball bowler. But then you've also got Lance Morris and Jai Richardson getting contracts again. So that seems to be where the selectors think the next crop of fast bowlers is going to be, that Richardson, Morris, Bartlett, and, you know, we've seen Joe Richardson do well at test level. Morris was seen bowl real heat. He could be a like-for-like replacement with Mitchell Starc. And I guess the challenge that Bailey, you know, your mate Bailey has is that you never know when the quicks are going to start to just drop a bit. And, you know, we've seen, say, famously, Jason Gillespie, great bowler, but he just dropped a little bit at the end and he was just exposed at international level. And I guess the challenge for Bailey, McDonald's and Cummins is knowing, say, when that happens to a Starc or a Hazlewood, if it happens. I mean, Jimmy Anderson's still going at mid-40s, so it might not happen. But in this contract list, Bailey's plan is your Richardson, your Murphy, your Bartlett, and your Ellis for white ball cricket.
Yeah, well, I mean, Mitch Starc, I think, is well known. He wants to get to 100 test match. And given Australian cricketing history, only one fast bowler's hit 100 test match, that being Glenn McGrath. Nobody else has. I mean, not many fast bowlers have played 100 test match. And Mitch Starc is, I think, 89. I think he's 11 tests away. That will probably, I think, would take him to the Ashes next year, given 5 tests against India, 2 in Sri Lanka. I think, you know, there might be another couple here and there. Starc might hit that around the Ashes next year, and that's the ultimate goal. So I think for Mitch Starc, and we know where that is, you know, Pat Cummins is still around for a good 4 or 5 years. I think Cummins might even give up that white ball, given, you know, he's led Australia to, you know, a 50, especially if Cummins can win the T20 World Cup this time around as well. Look, I mean, what's
he might be Pat skipper Cummins? Though.
Well, that is true, but he's given that up. Yeah, he's given that up a lot.
They've won everything. So I mean, this crop have won everything. They've won 250 over World Cups, a T20 World Cup, a Test World Championship, retained the Ashes a couple of times in England. I mean, India's a huge one that hasn't happened.
I guess even retained isn't still, you know, never won an Ashes in England. Still, it would still burn them. You know, we talked to Nathan Lyons a lot of times at the Shield, and it still burns him. And, you know, he's already spoken about the desire to go there and win another Ashes. I think an Indian subcontinent victory is probably out of it, because, you know, they had the chance sort of last year. I don't think many of them will be back. And you never know. I think, you know, you sort of sometimes look at Steve Smith. I've heard some whispers that, you know, come the Ashes, Steve Smith's probably just going to walk away. He's having a great time in the moment in India doing TV. Have you seen that, Menas?
I haven't seen much of it, but I agree with you. I think these next two summers is the end for this era. But I guess, you know, my one thing that always makes me nervous is I look back at the 2015 Ashes, and again, a lot of players went, this will be where we finish up. And we just didn't get there. They just They just aged out 6 months too early, and that series was a fucking disaster. We were bowled out for 60. And that's my fear, that the Ashes 2 years from now, like Khawaja might, he might be a yard too slow now.
Well, who are you, when you say 2015 Ashes, who are some of these players that you talk about?
Well, there was Haddon, Watson, Clark, Voges, you know, all these players were coming to the end of their career, and it was like, this will be our finish and we'll finish with a win, and it just didn't happen. And that's my fear for the next two summers is, you know, I hope these players get to the finish line, but sometimes it's not pretty. We saw with Aaron Finch, your mate Bailey just wouldn't drop him. Your mate McDonald just wouldn't drop him, and he was a disaster by the end. So,
fair enough, and you make a point. Like, yeah, and you mentioned some names, you know, like I don't think Johnson was probably a bit past it. You know, like I said, Shane Watson, Michael Clark. I think Chris Rogers might have been there, but he might have had a really good 2015 Ashes. So I agree. I think the golden generation's I still think one of the fast bowlers doesn't make it to the Ashes next year.
See, that's exactly right. And you don't know which one it'll be. Like, will it be an injury? Will it be a Stark just not quite being at his best? Anyway, back to the contract list. So also added this year, Aaron Hardy and Matt Short. I think two players we'll see a lot of at international level, primarily at white ball level to start, but both of them we could see transition into the test side as players start to leave the test outfit. Other players of note with a contract, Todd Murphy retained a contract. I thought he might miss out, but I guess with that tour of Sri Lanka early next year, perhaps they're still earmarking him as the second spinner. But I think Corey Roccacioli will be on that tour as well. But other than that, no real surprises from the contract list apart from what we spoke about before. Tim David wasn't offered a new contract, but George Bailey said he's still a huge part of their T20 side and he could earn a contract just by playing. But again, you know, with limited spaces, just 23 contracts given out. David not given a contract. Just while we're staying on contracted players, I don't know if you heard, Gav, friend of the show, Nathan Lyon, was due to play for Lancashire for the whole county summer.
Yep.
But George Bailey actually convinced him to cut down his county stint in half because, well, George Bailey talked about just asking Nathan Lyon to keep in mind the bigger picture and keep in mind his workload and his fitness and, you know, I think suggesting to Lyon that maybe he'd be better off coming back and doing a preseason here rather than being in England for the county stuff. I'm sitting on the fence with this one. You know, I'll leave it to Lyon's judgment and he, in the end, listened to Bailey. But I don't know. I mean, when you're just playing test cricket like Lyon does, I don't know why he couldn't have stayed and played county cricket. Like, I get it for an all-format player, but in Lyon's case, I'm a bit surprised.
Maybe it's Lancashire that have told Lyon not to play.
He signed the contract and he had to actually say, no, I can't honour it.
Yeah, but that's probably because the way Antonio Lancashire's other spinner is Chris Hartley. Is it Chris Hartley or who's the Tom Hartley?
I think this came from Lyon. This came from Lyon and Bailey. Bailey said, no, I don't want you to play the whole summer.
Yeah, interesting. Also, Lyon's got a young family. Maybe he wants to be back here in Australia. I'm not sure.
I'm pretty sure from snooping around, Gav, that it didn't come from Lyon's camp. This was Bailey saying, I don't think you should play the whole summer in England.
Oh, well, I mean, if Nathan Lyon plays all five tests and plays well against India, then we have to give my mate George Bailey another tick, don't we?
Yeah, indeed. I know. I was just surprised about it because, you know, I think about, I don't know, I just think someone like Nathan Lyon has earned the right to determine their own schedule. And he's such a pro. As I said, he doesn't play all the formats. I just think if I'm George Bailey, I let Nathan Lyon, who has 500-plus test wickets, determine his own schedule. All right. Now to some more domestic news. So friend of the show, Jason Gillespie, is gone as South Australian coach and Adelaide Strikers coach. So there's going to be a turning of the page in South Australia. He took over, he's been coaching the Strikers for 9 seasons, but he took over the Shield, the stateside, 5 years ago. And really, he's struggled to get the side to develop too much. In the Sheffield Shield, they were, in his first 2 seasons, they were last place. Then they were fourth place. And then this last season, they were fifth place. So just avoided the wooden spoon. They did make the Marsh Cup final last season, but then this year didn't, just won one game in that competition. So he probably wasn't able to make the changes and develop the players as he would have liked. But rumours are he's going to be the coach of the Pakistan Test side pretty soon.
Yeah, that's I've had a couple of Pakistani journalists actually text me and ask him and try to get that verified. So, look, it'll be interesting. Someone like, you know, the hostile environment, you always have division in the camps when it comes to Pakistan more than any other sort of nation. So it'll be a big test. I think Jason Gillespie's personality, which is sort of, you know, sort of laid back. I mean, he likes players to do a lot of the research rather than enforcing it on. That might suit in someone there like Pakistan. Mm. While, you know, the other way, you got to watch your back because there's always going to be division and somebody's, you know, every time Pakistan drops a catch, they would ask the question, that's coach's fault rather than the player's fault. So, it's going to be interesting to see.
What do you think about Gillespie's time at South Australia? Because, you know, came in big raps. He'd been a successful coach in county cricket for Yorkshire. South Australia has really struggled. And I actually think the team is better than it was 4 years ago. The team I saw this summer was competitive. It's developing, but it is slow progress.
It is. I think he worked pretty well with someone like a Travis Head when he was skipper, you know, sort of thing. But I think this new, in fact, but I don't know. I think sometimes, you know, when you're in the same system for a while, of course, Tim Nielsen is, as well, has gone as well. So sometimes you have a good relationship over there and that you're on the same page, the same vision. But I think he's done a decent job. Look, results are going to dictate that, but I don't think, from what I've heard, Jason Gillespie's never been a very result-orientated coach. I mean, you look at the work he did over in Surrey, and while he was there, he produced a lot of Test cricketers coming out of Surrey. You know, out of South Australia, you can argue, you know, at the end
Sussex.
Of the day.
That was Sussex, I think, actually.
I beg your pardon, Sussex.
I said Yorkshire, you said Surrey, but it was actually Sussex. We got there in the end.
Yeah.
Lucky we're taking a break. I think we need one.
Yeah, but exactly. So it's going to be interesting. I think he's done a decent job. And you can say someone like Travis Head, like I said, and Alex Carey has come under his regime, if you can call it that. So, but I think South Australia going through a lot of changes. Head's not there. Carey's not there. They'd probably needed a revamp. And it might start with a couple of New South Wales batters are heading over there, aren't they?
Well, yes. I mean, so let's talk about some domestic player movement. In the worst kept secrets in domestic cricket, it has been confirmed today officially by Cricket New South Wales that Josh Phillippe has moved from WA to New South Wales and Nick Maddison has returned to his home state. So they're great additions to the New South Wales contract list. And yes, I think there is some talk about maybe Curtis Patterson heading over to South Australia, but that hasn't been confirmed yet. I actually heard, in fact, that deal may have fallen over. What have you heard?
With the Curtis Patterson deal, I to be honest, I haven't. Is it Jason Sanger's going over there? Or is that
is he? He's going... No, I haven't heard that yet, but well, he'll be out of the contract here.
Yeah, but I think Jason Sanger might be targeting over there. I think Matt Kuhneman's gone down to Tasmania, but especially we don't know where our commentator Baxter Holt's going to end up.
He was on the show a couple of weeks ago talking about it. So,
I heard that. So, let's see. I think there's going to be a lot of change. And
I think Maddison and Phillippe to New South Wales is fantastic. That's exactly what the top order needs. And I think maybe it does maybe hasten the exit of maybe Dan Hughes or Moses Enriquez, but I think it's much needed, a revamp.
I definitely agree. I always like it when actually players go around. I mean, look at Nick Manson. I mean, wasn't doing much in New South Wales, but had a phenomenal time down in Victoria. So sometimes change is always good. I think someone like Jason Sango might be good for him, because we've watched, you know, 5 years, we've commentated on probably 25 Shield games, and we just felt like, you know, he goes back to club cricket, so scores thousands of runs. Why isn't he doing it here? Is it the system? Is it, you know, you need to get out of your comfort zone at times, and maybe this will help him.
Definitely. Other domestic movement. So in the Big Bash, Josh Brown, the big hitting batter from the Brisbane Heat, has signed for the Melbourne Renegades. Apparently that was a big dollar deal. So the Renegades.
How did he go in the Bangladesh Premier League? Was he over there?
He was. He didn't do as well as Alex Ross. He did okay, but our mate Rossi smashed it over there. That's all I can tell you. There's a new Big Bash rule that Big Bash clubs can sign one overseas player to a multi-year deal. So that is to maybe help encourage players from overseas or international players to stay with one club for a few years and offer them, you know, a better deal over a certain amount of time. The only complication is it's being grandfathered in. So this next season's not affected by this, but the year after, to sign this deal, you have to be available for the whole Big Bash season. So that means, you know, if you say offer to Rashid Khan a multi-year deal, that means you'd have to be signing that knowing that the season after next, he can't leave before the competition ends. It's complicated, Gav, but I mean, I think they've got to offer more flexibility to clubs. I don't think this is perfect, but I do think this will allow certain players, not the top players. I think the top rung of players will not sign a deal like this, but the ones just below that might go, yeah, I'll sign with the Sydney Sixers for 3 years. I'd love to be there for three summers.
Yeah, absolutely. And that avoids, and, you know, like I recall a while ago when I was working a little bit for Cricket Australia, I ended up speaking and engaging with the marketing teams, and they felt like if you had, you know, three or four players that are going to be part of that system for a while, you know, you can sort of build a team around them, not just in a from a cricketing sense, but off the field as well. You look at someone like, you know, the Stars always had a Glenn Maxwell, Adam Zampa, you know, Marcus Stoinis when they went through that era, or the Sixers, you know. They still have someone like Stephen O'Keefe, you know, Moses Enriquez. You got all these, you know, Phillippe is another one. So if they've got those sort of figures, you could, you know, you could actually build a whole system around them. And when I mean that is, you know, from merchandise to from ticketing and so forth. And I think this has got to play a big role as well from what I've been hearing.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, it just allows to build that relationship with a player and negotiate with a bit more flexibility, unlike the draft that they instituted. All right, we're going to take our final break of the summer, and then we'll be back with a little bit of a chat about the IPL and then Can't Let It Go.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
You're listening to the Cricket Unfiltered podcast. It's our season finale. I'm Menas. I'm with Gav Joshi. And Gav, I don't know if you noticed, but a little competition called the IPL got underway about 10 days ago. Have you caught much of it?
Oh, it's just a small league. I don't follow all small leagues. you know, like the pay packets are pretty poor, and is it worth it? Really? I mean,
did anyone care?
And it's a bit of unwanted, like, you know, cash being thrown around. I mean, Mitchell Starc went to what I think he gets. What does he get per ball?
Like 30 grand a ball. But your mate George Bailey, so Barrett asked him in the press conference last week, "Hey George, you've been watching much of the IPL, And Bailey was like, nah, it's a bit too late for me. And then very quickly, it was, oh, yeah, but I've been following the Australians really closely. Like, he didn't even know it was on.
Well, it's interesting he said that because maybe that responsibility has been outsourced to poor old Tony Dottomate.
Maybe they're just going to call Barrett once a week and get an update. He knows what's going on.
But because remember Tony Dottomate speaking to him when he was at the Shield, and he said, well, we don't want to sort of, and he told a bit few of the players that the IPL will have how players play perform in the IPL will have an impact on when they actually pick the T20 squad for the World Cup. So that's some breaking news here for you, everyone. But let's see who those players are. And based on that, I mean, Stark's taken one wicket, so Stark might not be included.
He got Warner and Marsh. He's got two. So with the IPL, I mean, as we're recording this, it's very, very early days, but Kolkata have won their first three games, as have the Rajasthan Royals. I guess the big story is Mumbai Indians, zero wins, a new skipper. So what about the controversy?
Oh, it's huge, isn't it? I mean, I've never seen an Indian player booed.
So listeners, what happened was Rohit Sharma, you know, who's famously won the IPL with the Mumbai Indians
he's a local Mumbai lad as well. That plays a big role.
He was dumped as skipper for Hardik Pandya, who came back from Gujarat. So that has meant they've been booing Hardik, and Rohit's just standing out there unhappy.
Well, not just Rohit, but I mean, I think the Indian crowd also believe that Hardik Pandya has hardly played for India. He seems to have only proved his fitness he's fit only for the IPL. So that's got the players agitated. It's the fact that Rohit Sharma was almost, you know, the owners have actually taken the responsibility away from him. Now, Mark Boucher's coming as the coach as well. He's sort of gone in on record to say that we felt that Rohit's performance and given how much, you know, he captains India in all three stages, we wanted to just give him a bit of a break. But I don't think Rohit Sharma wanted a break. So
I don't think the fans wanted a break.
There's been cases where they've had extra police put at a ground because they're worried about Hardik Pandya's safety. I mean, I've never seen an Indian crowd boo, one of their own, and it's happening all across. So, and given that Mumbai is not winning, I think the boos are going to get louder. Good thing for Mumbai Indians is, Sky Suryakumar Yadav, the best T20 player, comes back in. I think from the game on Sunday, so that should be good. But I guess, you know, the IPL is just, the famous saying, it's where, you know, the opportunity meets talent or talent meets opportunity. And that's certainly happening. We've seen a lot of the young players come through. And I'm sure you'll speak about, you know, the new fast bowler that everyone, even journalists in Australia, seem to be talking about.
Yeah, that's right. Mark Drumgold sent an email in talking about Mayank Yadav. And he's been bowling above 155 kilometres per hour. There was a sizzling delivery that bowled Cameron Green a couple of days ago, just went straight through him with sheer pace. And, you know, I was saying before that, you know, Australia has an ageing batting lineup, and if you can get a player like Yadav bowling 150 plus at them, you could make life really uncomfortable for them next summer.
No, he's only played first-class game. I think people in India tend to get very excited. He might be on that A tour to see how he's going. I don't think he'll play a test match. I mean, straight up, I think they'll have to monitor how he's going in first-class cricket. One thing the new Indian selection panel has been very keen on is to make sure that players are playing not just IPL, they're playing domestic five-day cricket. So, I think, you know, he's only played one first-class cricket. I mean, you can't see India throwing him in the deep end at whether that's at Perth or Brisbane. He might come on tour, like I said, if they bring in a party of 30 or 40 to see how he goes. But, I mean, look, it's wild to think he'll play that first match in Perth, maybe in Brisbane. Because India's probably going to bring out the three quick Shami, Siraj and Bumrah. We don't know about Shami's fitness. He's probably going to have 6 months out of the game. But, you know, there's a couple of other lads who are in front of him. So, I mean, I think people are getting overhyped. I think Steve Smith actually on Indian TV said, oh, I would love to face this lad in that first test. But he's getting good coin to probably say all these things in India at the moment as well. So I can't see him playing that first test. He might be on that, you know, A tour here. But for that, he has to prove that he can bowl, you know, at least 12 overs in a day. I don't think he's ever done that. He's only played one first-class game.
Well, Gav Joshi preaching caution regarding Mayank Yadav. Let's see. Let's see what happens. I guess probably the most notable game so far in the IPL has been this record-breaking game between the Sunrisers Hyderabad, Pat Cummins Sunrisers Hyderabad, and the aforementioned Mumbai Indians. Sunrisers batted first, made a lazy 3 for 227. And then in reply, Mumbai were 5 for 246. So that's a new record aggregate for a T20 game. That's 523 runs. It's also a new record for sixes in a game. 38 sixes were hit. And our own Travis Head hit 62 off 24 for Sunrisers. So, yeah, that's probably the most notable game so far, but very early days there. Other T20 news before we get into Can't Let It Go. It is reported that the BCCI, Cricket Australia and the ECB are looking at a possible return to the T20 Champions League tournament that famously the Sydney Sixers won the inaugural tournament back 10, 12 years ago. And then a couple of years into it, the Champions League did stop being played. But Gav, I thought that concept still had a lot of potential, and I actually think now it might even do better.
Yeah, there was also a little bit extra with the Victorian Premier Cricket League teeing up with a couple of companies over in India to see if like club cricket can take off. So you basically have the best club team. That could be your St. George, could be your Randwick, could be someone down, you know, in Tasmania, and they don't want to take a local team out of Pakistan or India, and they play in a tournament somewhere. So, you know, it's the next hierarchy sort of. So that could happen as well. Champions League, always in question. It might be a way, from what I've heard, to control the franchises. The boards will take a little bit more ownership and you know, rather than the franchises going all out. So it could be a little way of sort of, you know, stopping this sort of the T20 franchise growth and the board playing a bit of a role in that.
Yeah, I like the idea of I liked the concept when it first came out, and I think one reason it might work better now is that the franchises are more established, brands have more supporters. I guess where I preach caution is that a lot of the same players play in these leagues all around the world, so how would you sort of determine who plays for what franchise if they're signed for both? But in the end, it's just all about finding time. And they'll find time if there's enough money. So if they get a good TV deal, I think you'll see it happen. Last bit of news, Ben Stokes has made himself unavailable for the upcoming T20 World Cup. He wants to focus on England's Test cricket and the England summer, and he probably needs to, so that's very sensible. But a big loss for the English team. I mean, he's a match winner. We saw in the final that they won here 2 years ago. What a great player Stokes is in those high pressure situations. So a big loss, but not surprising.
Yeah, look at the way he sort of came back in that 50 over World Cup, and we saw what happened. I think I think Stokes is 33. I think all his focus should be on Test cricket. He's the captain. Given you know they were pummeled in India 4-1 as well. They're what, second last in the World Test Championship, and they've got so. I sort of, you know, I agree. I think Ben Stokes has done enough in the white ball game. I think he can just focus on, and you know, I think he also said that he wants to be fully fit and wants to be bowling as well and batting to have his true ownership. From what the whispers I've heard, you know, he genuinely feels that, you know, if he's just playing as a batter, he's just stopping somebody else from coming through. So good on Ben Stokes for being honest with himself, to be and some of the other sort of the England, you know, with Rob Key and the selectors there as well.
Yeah, good on Ben Stokes. All right, that is it for all the cricket headlines. Let's wrap up the season with Can't Let It Go, that little bit of cricket news you just can't let go through to the keeper. I'm going to go first on this one. So recently the New South Wales Cricket Awards were held, and the Steve Waugh medalist was Jack Edwards, so that's great to see. But I want to give a huge shout out to friend of the show, Talia Wilson, who was the Belinda Clark medalist for the outstanding women's player of the summer for New South Wales. She was on the show as part of the WBBL series. So, so happy for her. She scored a century and took 6 dismissals in one match during the summer. So she's an absolute star. And she was the Belinda Clark medalist. So well done to her. Gav, do you have a Can't Let It Go for us?
Oh, there's just been so many, to be honest, over the summer. I'm going to hold myself, wait for a month, and then we'll start off the show with a Can't Let It Go for me. It'll be probably something from the IPL.
Nice one. Well, listeners, thanks for tuning into the podcast over summer. There's been some great cricket. We've loved covering it. As I said, 180 odd episodes, an episode every 3 days. So it will be taking a little break now. But as I said, I'm going to be putting out some of the classic interviews from Cricket Unfiltered. And, Gav, as I reflect on the last sort of, 15 months of the show, the show just continues to go from strength to strength, I want to thank you for your contributions over the summer.
Thank you, Menes. It's been an absolute privilege. And look, I think the summer is going to be even bigger next year, or I'm sure next time we're having a chat in about a month or two's time. I mean, we'll be working out the T20 squad, or maybe the squad for the T20 World Cup will be named. And I'm sure I'll be asking you a question. Should Matty Wade be opening the batting?
Can't wait for that. Well, listeners, final one, I want to thank all the listeners. You are the best. The listeners to Cricket Unfiltered, they're so loyal. Love to, I know I hear it from a lot of you, but also there's, thousands of you that, I don't hear from, but I just want to thank you very much for supporting the show. Couldn't do it. If you weren't there, we wouldn't do it, but thank you so much. And we'll be back soon.
This is a Piccolo Podcast production.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.